For those looking for a liberatory martial arts learning approach and curriculum, we've created Liberation Martial Arts. It doesn't just teach you martial arts, it's also an approach to learning movement skills. The whole point of our program is to remove the need for a coach, to liberate you from the need of top-down instruction and toxic gyms. If you have a coach and also have a gym, then you can apply our learning approach to improve your progress. Or maybe you also need a supplemental martial arts community as a counter to the commercial gym you go to. You can actually apply our learning approach to learn anything, and our practitioners are. They're applying it to all sorts of things, whether physical, mental, or even personal. It's just a radically different approach to everything. Sign up for Liberation Martial Arts at the Southpaw Pod Patreon, or support us by signing up for one of the other tiers, and help us support this project while also getting access to bonus content, like early releases of SDS9 with transcripts. SDS9 Season 3 was recorded from the beginning of 2023 to early 2024 and was first published on Patreon. Now that we're done with the season, the entire season is being released all at once on the Southpaw public feed. Find Season 4 on the Southpaw Pod Patreon. This is Southpaw Deep Space Nine Season 3, where we analyze Deep Space Nine and Star Trek from a political and historical lens, episode by episode. I'm watching DS9 with fresh eyes, and Scott is our veteran Trek fan. We are discussing Season 3 of DS9, Episode 3, The House of Quark. Scott, can you tell us about this episode?
There's nothing I'd rather do. So, we open up, we are at Quark's bar, Morn is leaving, which usually suggests that it's time to close up. Business has been bad. We're understanding that with unease with the Dominion, people are just coming into Deep Space Nine less, they're coming into the bar. The only person left in the bar is a Klingon man drinking blood wine. The Klingon man wants credit for his wine, he's done paying. And he attacks Quark and accidentally stabs himself to death. Now that there's been someone died, the bar is popular again, and he decides that he's going to say that he killed the guy. And Rom goes along with it. Though Odo obviously doesn't buy it. Odo knows a lot of things about Quark, but Quark killing somebody in combat? Not really. And so he just creates this fake story where he stabbed the guy to death. And then we go, Keiko and Miles are hanging out after work, and Keiko's working on plants, and turns out that she's closed the school. There are no students right now, because except for Jake and Nog, who she'll tutor. The station is seeing less and less people visiting and less people staying. And Keiko says she is fine, and that, but it really doesn't seem to be the case. Quark's is booming, though. And Odo informs, you know, you killed the guy that you supposedly killed is Kozak, the head of a powerful Klingon family. And Odo's like, do you want to change your story? If the family comes, it could mean a lot for you. But Quark is really drunk on the respect and says if the family comes, he'll offer them a bribe. And as Quark is walking through the corridors, he's accosted by a Klingon who says that he is Kozak's brother, Dagor, and he is angry. And he's like, you tell me the truth because, you know, what is going on? And Quark tries to tell the truth, but Dagor says that if the information that Kozak died in a dishonorable way, it would be a disgrace and the family would be dishonored for ages. And it is better for the family if Kozak died in combat, which in Klingon culture is honorable. An honorable death would require no retribution, so he wouldn't be killed or anything like that. So Quark's like, all right, I'm gonna uphold the lie. And then we go back. Miles makes a nice dinner for Keiko, and Miles is like, I'm making, it's a holiday. It's I love my wife day. That's not exactly what he says, but he's pretty much celebrating her and noticing that there's something going on. He's trying to make the best of this. You know, Keiko is a decorated, you know, botanist, and she is there with Molly. She doesn't have a lot to do right now. And even though she agreed to support Miles in this, you can just tell. But there's just like this, there is this very powerful romance in this episode that's nice. At Quark's bar, Grilka, Kozak's wife, comes in. Quark upholds the lie. An honorable death is important. Grilka attacks Quark and realizes quickly that Quark couldn't have killed her husband. Grilka knocks him out. They go to Kronos, which is the Klingon homeworld, and they're at the house, which was previously called the House of Kozak, but right now it is unnamed, and we meet Tumek. So it turns out that Dagor was not in fact Kozak's brother, but from another clan that's been beefing for a long time and who wants the land and property, and going through a litigious way, which really isn't the Klingon way, by claiming an honorable death, Grilka actually won't take the house, which she could have if Kozak died of accident, because there could have been dispensation. So right now the house is open to being destroyed with no heir, and Dagor is trying to get all of that. So Grilka tricks Quark into marrying her, and it's like, uh-oh, what's going on? We go back, Miles goes to see Ben. Miles needs advice. Keiko is acting like nothing is wrong, but clearly she is not well. So, and even though Miles has changed his schedule to make more time with her, he wants permission to turn one of the bays into an arboretum, because he thinks that having a plant project might make Keiko feel better. And Sisko's like, whatever you have to do, like, really nice friendship there. You know, there's nothing, he says, there's nothing sadder than knowing someone you love is unhappy. That hits me in the heart. It's really beautiful. So Miles hopes that the gesture will help. And we go back to Kronos. Dagor is going to make a claim of the House of Kozak. And Grilka has done the ritual, the Brechtal ritual in Klingon law. You can marry the person who killed your spouse. So they can keep their land. And Gowron, the Chancellor, who's this awesome Klingon character, well, not awesome, but an interesting Klingon character who's previously on Star Trek The Next Generation, renames the House of Quark. Quark laments that Grilka doesn't know what to do moving forward, and as the house is in shambles. So Quark wants to have more of a say because the house has been weakened by Kozak's debts and his behavior. They owe Dagor lots of money. And Quark is like, can I see the books and ledgers? And Grilka calls looking at the act filthy to look at things again through a litigious lens. But Quark is like, Grilka, you and Kozak's plans have not gone well over. Let me look at the ledgers. Back on Deep Space Nine, Miles is talking to Bashir and shows the blueprint of the Arboretum. In a moment of lucidity that still comes off as like, you know, Bashir's, you know, manly, you know, woman's man thing, says it'll work for a little bit of time before the underlying problem that Keiko isn't able to be a botanist comes on the forefront. And he starts explaining how different actions in the past have bought him more time with the myriad women that he's dated. On Kronos, through a lot of looking, Quark sees that Dagor has been systematically attacking the finances of the Kozak house and property, and taking and has taken on all of his debts, all of the House of Kozak's debts. So what Dagor has been doing has been systematic and through law and money and paperwork. So they go to the council, and Quark is trying to explain all of this stuff. Obviously, the Klingons are bored. Gowron is incredulous that Decor would use money to destroy the family. And Quark tries to make an advance to Grelka, and she says, if you don't take your hand off, Ray, I will destroy you. And Decor challenges Quark to, you know, trial by combat, and brings Rom into the equation. He shows up saying that Rom saw the actual incident and Kozak fell on his sword and whatever. Decor's just really thirsty for this land. And then we see Quark and Rom, they're going to escape, and Grelka catches them. It's like, this is really disappointing, but if you want to be dishonorable, go ahead. But I expected more. And they both say, Grelka and Quark say mean things about their people and are a little racist. Then we go to the hearing, and at the last minute, Quark shows up and accepts the battle. And right as the battle with Decor starts, he throws his batleth, and Quark offers his body because he realizes this is a ruse. Everyone knows that I'm going to lose to you. This is an execution. And you just want an excuse to kill me because you can't win in court. So Quark says there is no honor in killing an unarmed Ferengi, and everyone will know the story of you killing somebody who doesn't have their weapon. So Decor goes to strike. He's like, I don't care. But Goron stops him, and he realizes at that moment that all that's said about Decor is real, and he is kicked out of the hall, and his name is dishonored. And Gowron notes Quark's bravery. And Grelka is given dispensation to run the house, and Grelka divorces Quark by smacking him in the face. And so that's that storyline. We get back to Deep Space Nine. Miles suggests Keiko go on a biology expedition on Bajor. Miles suggests that she does it and bring Molly, and he'll visit on the weekends. He wants Keiko to be happy, and she needs to be a botanist and feel like she's doing something. He understands that even though she agreed to one thing, she still needs to have purpose. And we go back to the bar, and Rom tells Quark that he's proud of him and asks to hear the story of everything over again.
A note to our listeners. If you love the Southpaw Project, please support us and help us get paid for our labor by financially supporting us on Patreon. This will give you access to exclusive bonus content, like early releases of Southpaw Deep Space Nine, our fictional narrative podcast, Fighter's Brew, break-free versions of our shows without interruptions like you're hearing now, bonus articles, Fighter's Brew transcripts with extra content, Liberation Martial Arts Online, as well as our private chat group on Discord. You can also make one-time donations at Ko-Fi, or show your solidarity by wearing our swag. You can find all pertinent links at southpawpod.com. Murder bringing popularity back to Quark's bar reminds me of the popularity of true crime. Maybe this is another one of those Star Trek Deep Space Nine things where they unintentionally predicted the future.
Crime is good for business. Exploitation makes money.
Yeah, exactly. And to that point, right? Exploitive entertainment is basically what true crime often is. And this is exactly what Quark honed in on and tries to profit off of, like a good media executive.
Is there ethical true crime?
That's a good question. For the most part, I would say no, and especially the way it's done, because the way popular true crime is done, they're not talking about like institutional police murders of Black people. They're not talking about like My Lai massacre. They're not talking about things that affect marginalized, oppressed people. They usually do it around stories where rich white people, right, the mainstream, can look at it and be like, oh, that could have happened to me. I have license to be paranoid. Not in my backyard. Or shit they'll report on Nextdoor, right? Oh, it could happen to me. This stuff, I'm always in danger. I'm always persecuted. So perhaps there is a way to do true crime theoretically, ethically, or do it in a just way. But the way true crime as a genre is being done, no, it is not ethical. And I don't think they ever thought about the ethics, and they don't care.
There was a podcast a long time ago, but I don't remember the name, that looked at some of the missing Indigenous women in Canada that wasn't the trope of true crime where it's like two people being like kind of like cutesy about someone or many people getting murdered. Yeah, I know this is a tangent, but I find true crime podcasts to be disgusting.
And here's the other thing, right? If they do something like that, if it is underserved voices trying to tell a story nobody else can tell, then what is their easiest access to getting their voice out there? Podcasts. Because even if you write an article, you have to try to get it somewhere. There's some kind of gatekeeping, whereas podcasts, there isn't. But then unfortunately, because podcasts themselves are so known for like Joe Rogan types or white dudes who just want to talk about white dude stuff, or it's white people doing true crime stuff that only suburban white people care about, a lot of marginalized people, oppressed people feel podcasts are not for them. So it's a weird thing where if you are a marginalized person, podcasts are the only way to get your voice out there, but the audience that needs to hear your stories already have a bad taste about podcasts, so they won't often listen to it. It's a catch-22. I don't have any solution for that. This is more of an observation. Now, this is an interesting episode because this time it's Quark being used in a battle over property and assets. The Klingons and Ferengi in this episode are both capitalists, but approach it from their cultural characteristics. Klingons are more upfront about taking what they want, whereas Quark uses trickery. Combine both and you have the Dominion and the history of the West. Also, a point I always bring up is how if oppression is done by paperwork, people ignore it or can't understand it. This show was a great example. We talk about how the US is like Cardassia. Well, we're also like Klingons. If it's not centralized, if it's not hard power, we don't spotlight it. It's a psychological bias, which makes it a journalistic bias. Because as corporate-controlled media is, it's not just that. It's also that they know no one but nerds will care if they report about paperwork, which is why across the political spectrum, most Americans will agree centralization and authoritarianism are bad. Because that needs no nuance. It's black and white. It's easy to understand. So a real life example of this, everybody understands the corruption of the Catholic Church and the child sex abuse that happened there, right? But just going by the numbers, it's actually Protestant churches that have more child sex abuse. Did you know that?
I did not.
Why I bring that up is not to carry water for the Catholic Church. No. Keep that energy the same. I'm just bringing up a bias because the Catholic Church is centralized around one church, whereas Protestants is more of an umbrella church where they all act independently. And also, Catholicism is not the main Christian sect in the United States. It's the minority sect, and Protestants are the majority. Like 70-something percent of Christians in the U.S. are Protestant. So of course, they're going to have more child sex abuse because there's just more of them. There's more of these churches, but nobody's going to cover this because they're all decentralized. So there's no one central figurehead or one central power that seems to be like the mastermind behind all this, even though as far as results, if we just care about consequences, it's doing more damage, right? So this isn't to say people approve of this. This is just a point I'm making about psychological biases. This even goes back to politics. A lot of times people point at like certain political organizations because they're grouped together or it's a big organization. And then tacitly, because of the psychological bias, assume these problems don't exist in smaller groups when it's just, like I said, when it's centralized, it's easy to pinpoint, spotlight, write an article about one thing. It's much harder to write an article about a whole bunch of churches related by just an ideology, but they aren't organized together.
Yes. Because there's also sensationalism and then there's proxy, but also going back to the paperwork, you know, there's this thing, you know, procedural oppression. The idea of, I mean, people that argue that systemic racism, systemic oppression exists, look at the way that in which laws or paperwork or things are created, that give certain populations of people less access than others. And it's created in a way that it's legal, yet you see how it doesn't go, but it doesn't actually equal equality or even equity. And, you know, you're able to use paperwork as a way to use eminent domain abuse is using paperwork to take away people's land. So what de Gaure is doing is using procedure in a way that affects people that is very unlike the Klingon culture, but is definitely like what America does with legal things that are oppressive and not moral.
Good point. Now, Quark once again shows in this episode, he's not all about profit. He does have some moral compass and once again shows a soft spot for women. His own type of male honor, perhaps chivalry. Klingons also show they're not just about honor. They want to accumulate power and wealth, just directly, honorably. Now, this main plot was intertwined with the story of Miles and Keiko. And this time, it was more parallel stories of doing the right thing for your wives and allowing them to pursue their own autonomy. Of course, both stories were paternalistic over women and about the duties of a husband, but one was about divorcing to free the woman, whereas Miles had to free Keiko to save the marriage. And an observation I bring up often is how systems of oppression can still exist in Trek. Like racism, we've seen that criticized and brought up several times in DS9. And this week's episode shows how with Klingon and Ferengi culture, and even within Starfleet, patriarchy is alive and well. But I like how Miles checks himself on his patriarchy. He's also a character who had to check himself on racism and toxic masculinity. He seems like the character that's supposed to represent the audience, where through him, we check ourselves. So I like that about Miles. He's that white guy who's growing as a person, and hopefully the audience grows with him.
I will say what I really enjoy is that while this is definitely a light mythology episode, it's still shoulders above what we've been getting previously in the first two seasons. Some of that can be attributed to the fact that this episode was written by Ronald D. Moore, who is better known probably for, well known as the creator of the remake of Battlestar Galactica and Outlander. But he was brought on to Deep Space Nine from Star Trek because he was a guy that was really, really loved telling Klingon stories. And he was like the Klingon guy in the writer's room. So he was really good at creating this episode that gives you some insight into Klingon culture. And then the other part of Miles and Keiko is just also nice. I mean, I give this episode, you know, a solid 4 out of 5 for what it is.
Can you tell us about the next episode?
So the next episode, Equilibrium, is Jadzia is going through some stuff.
Until then. If you like this episode and like what we do, support us on Patreon. We also have the Liberation Martial Arts program if you want to train with us from wherever you are. It's both theory and practice and removes the need for an instructor. What you're learning is how to teach yourself. It's also an approach you can take with you from the gym into the world. Sponsors get a monthly training session with me, either in person or online. Supporting me not only helps me pay my bills, but it also helps me support my family. Find all our links, including Salpaw merch, at salpawpod.com.